What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktail recipes. Created by us, your favorite podcasters and all-around weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, and Blackwell's. Or just head to nofspodcast.com/go for the links.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
Join us!
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
We should start this episode with like a clip from that Queen song. Like, instead of "I want to break free," like, "I want to believe, I want to believe." Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed and the UFO curious. I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
And we're here this week because we want to believe. We're closing out a double feature, a second alien-themed double feature. Previously, we talked about alien invasions. This double feature here, we are talking about the alien conspiracy. And this week, we're talking about one of the most well-known alien abduction stories. We're talking about Whitley Schreiber's Communion. Directed by, you know, Philippe Mora, whatever. But more importantly, this is Whitley Schreiber's story.
It's based on a true account.
He wrote the screenplay.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
Whitley Schreiber was a novelist who horror fans...
A fiction novelist.
Well, yeah, like when you say novel, I think that kind of implies it, don't you?
Well, when we're talking about a nonfiction novel, I think you should specify that this was his first nonfiction novel.
Yeah.
He was a horror author previously, so this is kind of a diverse... version into weird to weirder.
Sure. And that's maybe, yeah, I guess if he was a novelist who was writing about, I don't know, turn of the century.
Yeah, but so
romance.
This is how I feel about the L. Ron Hubbard stuff, where it's just like they created a fictional world of supernatural stuff. And now they're like, oh no, but it's true now.
The L. Ron Hubbard thing, that's a little more complicated. That's some deep waters there in terms of what the original goal was. Whitley Schreiber, though.
I'm just saying, you guys are already really good at world building. Why would I believe that you put on front of your fiction?
It's tough. I don't know if you saw that the L.A. Times, I think, like one of the biggest like book reviewers, his second book, the follow-up, his second nonfiction book, the follow-up to Communion, they took from the nonfiction section and put it in fiction.
That's so sassy.
Very. Whitley Schreiber, though, his previous novels included Wolfen, which was adapted into a movie.
Oh, really?
But more importantly, The Hunger.
Whoa!
Right?
What?
Nightmare on Film Street certified banger.
Wow, that is a banger.
Well, I mean, he didn't write the screenplay.
I know, but he's cuckoo bananas.
And I think that's exactly what Christopher Walken was trying to channel in this movie. You know, I think it goes without saying we're talking about a novelist who has some alien-ish experiences. But for anybody who hasn't seen the movie.
Secret Window with Aliens.
Secret Window with Aliens, which that could be good thing number one. But for anybody who hasn't seen the movie, what are our three good things?
Yes. so we obviously have to start with Christopher Walken.
This is the most Christopher Walken.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Communion, but you think you know Christopher Walken, he's gonna dial it up even more. You know how every time you see Nicolas Cage, you think you know Nicolas Cage, and then he does something different? This is Christopher Walken's Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, when we think, every time I think about how kooky Christopher Walken is, when I go back and watch his biggest hits, he's just a normal actor. Like, he makes a couple weird choices here and there.
He's got some weird voice staccatos.
Sure. He forgets his lines every once in a while, but half a second later remembers them.
It's deliberate pausing. He's bringing attention to certain words.
But in this movie, he is definitely improvising, and it is off the fucking walls.
Is he? I had such a journey with his performance in this movie. There were moments where I'm like, wow, this is just brilliant. He's conveying so many emotions. And then I was like, is he dancing with the aliens?
He's dancing with a raw duck at the beginning. Like, while he's cooking, he's wearing headphones. He's reading, like, the pages for the book that he's working on. He's just dancing with a duck in his hands.
Yeah, he's cuckoo bananas this whole movie. But, you know, he's trying to portray a real person.
He's doing something. Good thing number two, I'm going to say, the alien sequences in this movie, genuinely great. And a couple of them, actually scary.
There are some really good scares, and this movie is equal parts silly and scary, sometimes at the same time.
I mean, I think if we're to believe the story, that's exactly the roller coaster you're gonna have. Like, it's scary, it's unnerving, it's silly when you think about it, because it's so outlandish. But ultimately, there's this level of terror that you can't escape. All I'm really trying to say is there's a couple sequences that are actually perfect for horror fans. Overall, this is more of a you could watch this as a comedy if you wanted, but there are actual horror moments in it, which is why we're talking about it on a horror movie podcast.
And also, we want to believe.
Yeah.
This week.
This week we do. What's good thing number three?
Good thing number three, we've got Christopher Walken, we've got the aliens. Mm-hmm.
We could be real nice to the movie and say that it's very respectful and it tries to present this authentic alien abduction story as credibly as possible. But in reality, this is a Nightmare on Film Street podcast, and we're just two kooky idiots who love little tiny details that are of bullshit in movies. And I'm going to say that this is technically a Christmas movie and also technically a Halloween movie.
Yeah, and what a great time capsule of, one, what Christmas trees looked like in the 80s. Holy shit, they did not
have... Oh, they were bad.
Genetically modified Christmas trees.
Until you see that Christmas tree in the alien spaceship, and then it's a perfect, picturesque Christmas
tree.
That's
because it's a clone. but the Halloween sequence, if you want a time capsule, 80s kids costumes, they're having a Halloween party, everybody is wearing that grease paint makeup.
Ugh.
They're trick-or-treating in an apartment. It's just such great Halloween vibes for about 5-6 minutes. Totally worth it.
All right, we're going to toss the trailer when we get back. We're going to get to the bottom of this alien conspiracy. Did it actually happen? Is it all just made up by a struggling writer?
We're going to definitively determine. This feels like a YouTube thumbnail.
A little. Okay, fuck it. Here's the trailer. We'll be back in a minute.
It wasn't a dream.
There's a group that meets.
Group?
People who've seen the same sort of things you have.
Which group of aliens abducted you?
Bob, we are not victims. We are participants.
I don't recall them being human.
I've got to go, my baby, screaming!
You people, you sit there. You're in for one big surprise.
Communion is currently sitting at a 5.5 out of 10 on IMDb, 43% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 3.0 out of 5 on Letterboxd, which I gotta tell you is, if you go through the Letterboxd reviews, it's a great mix.
It's all over the place?
All over the place. It's like 2.5 stars, 1.5 stars, 5 stars!
Yeah, I think a lot of it is like, are you rating this with irony or not?
Uh-huh. It's just so outlandish. But, I mean, like we mentioned up top, the scare sequences with the aliens in the movie are really well built.
And yeah, well, and there's also, like,
the level of consciousness changes. You aren't yourself in those invasion moments. So you're not creating memories the way you normally do. But like your movements and your responses, like there's already a level of control before they've even appeared. I think that is the scary stuff. The fact that you're awake and seemingly conscious, but you're not reacting as you would.
Like you don't realize you're in the tractor beam. You're already in the tractor beam.
Well, I think there's a level of you that does, but it's like you're walking through soup and you can't...
Walking through soup.
You know what I mean? Like, if you were to run away, you can't.
Uh-huh.
One of the greatest moments in those, like, alien invasion sequences that really hit me was... It's like the third time they come into the room... You know, Christopher Walken's doing his, like, disinterested face because he's blasé about it. He's seen these aliens so many times. Such good performance when they come in. But his wife, Anne, this is the first time she wakes up when they're in the room basically picking up her husband. And she's pinned in the bed screaming silently.
Yeah.
And the next day and throughout the rest of the movie, she doesn't remember this invasion sequence, but her eyes are open and she's screaming in terror at what she's witnessing, but she's just not creating any memory of it.
Yeah, that's the fucking best. I love it's probably just because I also have nightmares like that where I'm just like screaming and like I can feel in the real world that my mouth is open. And sometimes I wake up and my mouth is open, but like obviously I'm not screaming, at least not always. Apparently I am sometimes, Kim will tell me, that I'm just like, in my sleep every once in a while. It's because I fall asleep watching shit like this, right? So, like, my nightmares are always all over the place. Yeah, no, this movie is, so Whitley Schreiber and his wife, his son, and their friends at the beginning go to their cabin in, like, you know, north of the city. They all have some sort of experience. This is like the first, you know, weird woo-woo moment. Whitley Schreiber seems to be, I'm just going to call him Whitley. Whitley Walken seems to be the only person who has like a very specific encounter that he can remember. But
he's already paranoid and a little kooky. Like he's a very zany guy, but he's a writer. He wears a weird hat. He dances around. He talks to himself. He records himself writing. Like, and he's also very tech-minded. He's got... surveillance stuff all over the place. Like the apartment has a security system that's operated on a telephone device, and the cabin also has a security system and a ton of motion lighting. So he is already subconsciously afraid of intruders.
Yeah, which maybe that's thematic. Maybe that's written for the movie. I don't know if it's entirely true, but if it is, this is the guy who's waiting for somebody to show up and is just kind of always looking for something to show up. But his friends had a weird experience as well. Like, so strange that they made him drive them home in the morning.
That would have so been me.
Yeah. It's been you.
I would have been like, yeah, I really wanted to do this cabin thing, but your house was fucked. So,
yeah, there were lots of lights is what everybody was saying. There were lights outside, you know, brighter than the moon, not the security lights coming on and off, just like enough that it really fucked people up. They were very unnerved and they wanted to get out of there as quick as possible. It's worth mentioning that, you know, I haven't read Communion, but I have listened to a lot of Art Bell. Which
and
I think
Art
is
Bell
about the same.
Read Communion.
Art Bell definitely read Communion, but also Whitley Schreiber was on the show all the time, or on Dreamland, that other sort of like other Art Bell show. And he had talked about bringing friends to the cabin over the years, and people would have weird experiences. Like, it didn't
matter.
Why
did he keep this cabin?
I think you can't let it go at that point, especially once you're curious. You're like, I can't sell it because I legally know that it's like a alien hotspot. But also, this is my new muse. This is the source of all my new material.
I guess that's true because he did write a ton of novels based on this shit.
He did really kind of, he tried to keep these two things separate. I mean, like they would obviously bleed into each other, but like he continued as a novelist and as a nonfiction writer about like ufology and stuff. I mean, he's still doing it today. And I don't know what it is about that cabin. Like, just based on some of the episodes of the Art Bell show, it doesn't seem like it was always aliens that were showing up.
I think the movie kind of makes a case for it being aliens,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think he 100% is like, it's aliens. Because wasn't he very specific about being, oh, these were visitors?
I was curious when we get into this. I thought this would be a good spot to end on.
Like, what are you Well, and I guess the movie does present at one point like that there were troll people in the caves.
I don't like the troll people.
And you're just like, wait, what? So, okay, so the blue people are not aliens, and maybe the alien-looking people are aliens, but the blue ones are like from underground and they're working with the aliens.
I don't like it.
Maybe they're an ancient alien species that was dropped off like a really long time ago, and they live underground. And it's just, there's a lot of theories you could get. Because why are there two different species?
So, yeah, you're very right that he does not call them aliens. We don't present them as aliens in the movie. It's hard to separate those ideas, partly because of the lights. I mean, like, that's just, lights outside your
window. Well, and they stand on the roof of their apartment a lot and look up. So.
There's that. There's also a lot of, like, aerial shots, crane shots above the house or above the cabin coming down. The cover of the book for Communion has essentially become the classic tall alien gray. Like, this is what we all think of.
Was this, like, the first big-eyed alien?
I don't think it's the first, but it has become like the definitive, this is what the tall grays look like. You know, like when we think of aliens, this is what we think of.
Yeah, dancing red guys.
Dancing red guys.
Yeah, that's what they are in this movie.
Oh,
they dance, and Okay. They're red clay colored.
Okay, yeah, sure, they're clay colored. I mean, you can say that they're skin colored, I guess, but they do dance. It's strange.
But they do dance.
They do dance. In the book, in the movie as well, like, they try not to call them aliens. And this is one thing I will give Whitley Schreiber a lot of credit for. And maybe it's just a spin that he's taken once people really started disbelieving him. But he has tried to say that he doesn't know what they are. He doesn't believe that they're necessarily extraterrestrials. They could be terrestrial things. It could just be a psychological hallucination. He's tried to leave it very open as to what it was. Like, this is something I saw. This is something I experienced. I don't know what they were. I don't know where they came from. I don't know what it means. And I'm also not the only one. Now, in the movie, they do present the idea that his wife only kind of comes to these conclusions after hypnotherapy, and that maybe his son is also doing the same thing. I mean, kids are sponges. They're just going to pick up on what's going on.
Yeah, if dad's talking about weird visitors at night, kids are fucking filled with nightmares. Their brains are multiplying in size.
And we know, especially through the Satanic Panic stuff, that anybody going under hypnosis for any sort of, like, regressive therapy.
Yeah, and
if the therapist themselves isn't doing it properly.
So that was where I was really, you know, focusing while we were watching the movie, is how into the paranormal the psychologist was.
Oh, yeah.
At first I was like, okay, did they go to a regular psychologist? But then she's like, I have a group that meets.
Yeah.
So I think he's gone to a supernatural friendly psychologist.
I think so too.
So
she's already inclined to believe it.
Not a great person for your hypnosis.
At first she seems credible because
she's biased.
He's talking about how he had these weird hallucinations that he was probed rectally, and he's really mad about it. That whole sequence is great. Like, I'll kill you, you son of a bitch. But the psychiatrist sends him to a therapist who specializes in rape cases, which seems fitting. I mean, like, maybe something awful happened to him and he's just, like, created this background story to sort of, like, hide the memory, something he doesn't want to face. He's up there with other people. Anything could have happened. He could just be guilty about the fact that he cheated on his wife with a dude. But, yeah, she's very quickly like, so maybe we meet the other alien folks. And, I mean, how they're presenting it in the movie is probably not entirely how it worked out in real life. But there is a chance that somebody kind of just snowballed an idea in his head that got snowballed into other people's heads. But let's try and approach this like we want to believe, you know? This actually happened to him. We don't have any explanation for it. That is what I find fascinating about stories like Whitley Schreiber's. Because as much as I don't 100% believe something came from Mars or 100,000 light years away to come examine us, I do believe that people are seeing things. And I think that's just fascinating on a psychological level.
Yeah, I just think we haven't done enough studies into sleep paralysis and the whole host of things that come with your consciousness and falling asleep and the interruptions that can happen therein. But yeah, sure, let's believe them.
Well, Well, and we all like to go back and look at, like, old paintings and, you know, like, Egyptian hieroglyphs and be like, look, see, they were talking about the same thing. This is a man on a ship in the sky. You know, like, okay, let's calm down a second.
Like, the people also had wolves for heads.
Yeah, like, you're really cherry picking what some of the details are. But, I mean, like, the whole alien thing seems to be much more modern. And Carl Jung was fascinated by it. Like, unfortunately, he was an old man around the time that we started talking about aliens, but he was very specific that this is going to be really interesting if we can study it properly, because this is like a new archetype being built. Like, this is a new...
Because before we had technology, it was gods, and now that we understand the power of technology, we fear beings having more than us.
Maybe. I mean, like, he didn't have enough time to necessarily study it, but, like, he saw that this was a new evolution in the human psyche that is ripe for examination. And unfortunately, I think we've all just sort of gotten a little too deep into believing it literally, that, like, I think we really need to study it more abstractly.
The phenomenon or the human condition of the phenomenon?
Yeah, like the experiences, like how you're interpreting it. Like the way that like Japanese...
Should we be putting out more weather balloons or should we be doing more REM studies?
I'm leaning more toward the REM studies more than anything. And I think that's what's great about the Whitley Strieber story, like, to bring it all back to that, because he doesn't necessarily know if these are actual creatures. At least, I haven't read everything.
I think he's leaning towards the fact that he is literally being taken out of his room at night.
You think so?
He just doesn't know by whom.
I think maybe he's, at least through what I've heard him talk about, you're right. I mean, like, I think he is very much like, nah, somebody took me out. I don't know who. Could be lizard people, could be aliens,
okay.
Could be whatever.
We're getting too deep in the thick of this UFO thing. Let's just talk about
back to Christopher Walken.
These invasions as they happen, because there's a lot of weird shit that occurs during the invasions. There's dancing, yes, there's rectal probes, obviously. There's also a magician, Christopher Walken.
Oh, God.
There's...
I'm you, and you're me.
There's a giant wind-up toy. There's a bunch of well-dressed babies.
Oh, the wind-up toy is weird.
There's UFO masks. Like, pick one. Let's figure out what the fuck it means.
Okay, well, the wind-up toy is weird because the wind-up toy also has a big target on its chest, right?
And they autopsy it at some point.
Exactly. Like, I think it's a stand-in for him. Yeah.
But so that's one of the biggest scares of the movie, because at one point there's an alien invasion, but it's the wind-up toy and not an alien, and the wind-up toy flies through the room at him, and I did not like that.
It's the aliens peeking out from behind the cupboards and shit. Like, everything else in the room is totally normal, and it's just like...
Well, and you expect the invasion to be slow, like you expect, you know, a shadow through the window.
Yeah.
But instead, it's already in the room and hiding behind a cupboard.
And I think that's what's kind of interesting about how the movie approaches it in an authentic manner, because it's not cinematic. It's how Whitley experienced it, right? And then, at least that's what they're trying to do. It is still a movie. It's maybe a little too artsy in how it's presenting some of this shit, because it becomes like an acid trip.
Becomes an acid trip?
The whole movie's kind of an acid trip that we fall in and out of. I mean, first off, if you told me that Christopher Walken was high on acid this whole movie, I'd fucking believe it.
Yeah.
Half of his dialogue makes no sense!
On something.
No sense!
There's a period in the movie where we're getting the thesis of the characters.
Oh, God.
And they're in an art studio.
They're in an art gallery.
Or they're in an art gallery, and they're walking around, and they're not talking to each other. They're talking at the camera.
They're talking at the camera, and like they're positioned perfectly in front of these abstract paintings, and they're talking about how these creatures are probably God, and like this, and like the or gods, and like who knows what they could be, and like what words we have for them, and like we've had dreams where Whitley realizes that he's never actually seen their true form. Like, we've got the gray alien who then like takes off the bottom half of its face, and
yeah,
it's like a slug monster.
And then he's like, "You're never gonna reveal what you really look like to me." And then, so you're like, "Okay, the aliens don't look like grays. The grays is just, you know, the form that we would understand most."
Uh huh. What a bad form
to
take.
bugs on the inside.
There is a great moment where the cloned Christopher Walken, who's like a magician, wearing like a pencil thin mustache, is talking to Whitley Schreiber, but its voice is all fucked up while it's talking, and our dogs hated it. Like,
do you think they cloned him and there's a version of him up there, or he's just having fucking David Lynch dreams up there?
Okay, are you only saying David Lynch dreams? Because there's literally a moment where one of them says,
he's like, I dreamed you and you're the dream, or
I'm
something.
I'm the dream and you're the dreamer. They don't nail that very well. Because at first the alien says, I'm the dreamer and you're the dream. And then at the end of the movie, we've come full circle, I think, where Whitley Schreiber says to them, no, I'm the dreamer, you're the dream. And it's not as like boom pow a moment as I bet they thought it would be. But yeah, that's definitely what makes it feel a little bit more like David Lynch shit.
Did they clone him?
I don't think so. Maybe?
And then there's also a bunch of babies up there.
Oh, the scene where he's just hanging out with a bunch of babies and children. Like, for what? Oh, do you think they took his DNA and they've made babies?
Oh, they're harvesting his seed.
Guys, okay. I think we've brought
every
this up.
Every alien invasion is like, and then they took my seed. And you're like, okay, buddy. I feel like it's a lot of people who were really shamed when they were younger about masturbation being wrong.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, I didn't do it myself. It was a third evil entity.
You get drunk and you have one fling with one of your like dude bros, and then suddenly you're talking about it for 30 years like it was an alien invasion.
It's just, it always comes to anal probing and seed, and, right? And seeds.
It seems like there's a lot we're trying to hide here.
But, you know, I guess if they want information, a strand of hair isn't nearly as traumatizing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think we've brought it up in the show before, but if you are, this is a weird thing to say, but, like, if you're at all interested in alien stuff and you like hearing people talk about getting cloned and having your seed taken and stuff, I am begging you to look up this documentary called Love and Saucers. It is about a man who has had hundreds, thousands of alien experiences and has painted almost every single one of them. His entire house is filled top to bottom with paintings that he's made depicting visitations that he's had with aliens.
And hundreds, his alien family.
And his alien family. He has an alien wife, and they have had a lot of alien babies. And he's painted every single one of them. It's a great documentary. You gotta check it out. We might be too old for free candy, but we're not gonna let that stop us from having a ghoul time. This October, we're playing Trick or Treat with the Spirits of Halloween over in the Nightmare on Film Street Fiend Club at Patreon.
Each week, we're gonna be pulling movies at random from our spooky Trick or Treat basket. It's a Halloween boo bucket from McDonald's. And we're either gonna be given a treat, that's a horror movie we really want to talk about, or a trick, a horror movie we hoped we'd never have to discuss in public.
Join us as we let the spirit of Halloween take the wheel and play Trick or Treat with the Nightmare on Film Street podcast. You can find those episodes only at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
Or patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
As silly as this movie is, and I went on a roller coaster of emotions just in terms of whether I was enjoying myself or not, whether I liked it or not, whether it was silly or not. Mm-hmm. There's this one tentpole scene in the middle of the movie that just kind of changed everything for me.
Okay.
In the middle of the movie, they're back at the cabin. Whitley Schreiber, he's like off the handle. He grabs a shotgun. He's going through the house. He's loading the shotgun. It's getting a little scary, and not in the terms of like an alien's coming.
Yeah, at this point, he hasn't really realized what's happening or admitted to himself that what he saw has happened. He thinks he's maybe crazy. His wife's worried about him. And now he's fucking walking around with a loaded gun.
Yes. And during this ordeal, it's dark. He thinks he sees an alien holding a flower pot. He shoots at the flower pot. We find out it's just a flower pot. There's no alien there. His wife comes in and he shoots at her.
Uh-huh.
And the reaction in this scene is the most true and just like emotionally heart-wrenching. It landed in a way that the rest of the movie is so odd and the emotions are so extreme, but they nail this.
Yeah, this
seems
great.
This is grounded and it feels like how a married couple would really react to something like this.
Oh, sure.
Everybody feels the weight of that gun going off in such an appropriate way that it puts into perspective Christopher Walken's performance in the rest of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Because it's so grounded here.
Here it is, yeah. And it's, I love that concept, or not that concept, but like that, like what they're building there. Like we have somebody who is, has either gone through something that he can't explain and is trying to come to terms with it, or is actually having like a mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it doesn't happen to just him. It happens to everyone close to him.
Yeah.
Like regardless of whether or not there's aliens, you know, like let's just say he's schizophrenic and he has been undiagnosed for years and he's having an episode. This is what it would look like too.
Yeah. All of the arguments between him and his wife while they're trying to figure out what's going on with him through the middle of the movie are so good.
Okay. I think they're bad.
I love them.
I think she's a jerk.
I think she's a little emotional about it.
Like, I think she is like, why don't you fucking man up? Like, there's a lot of, I don't know. Like, I think she's like, you're a fucking idiot. Get your shit together.
Maybe a little bit, but I think that's more real and raw than them working together and working through it. Like,
yeah, no,
he's talking bullshit, John.
Yeah, I just think it's like from moment one, she's a little like, why don't you stop fucking around?
She freaks out a little much on Halloween because he overreacts to like a giant bug mask.
Yeah.
And she's like,
great sequence.
Dude, it's a mask.
Yeah.
Chill the fuck out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's threatening their marriage.
Oh, no. Like, eventually it gets to a very believable point.
Because from her perspective, it's like, you clearly are developing schizophrenia and you're not dealing with it.
I guess we're also just not dealing or showing that he's not getting any work done. Like, he's a writer. He's not doing any writing. Like, it's like this experience, like, he was having a bit of, like, writer's block. Like, he was already in a bit of a lull.
Yeah.
But this experience has completely upended everything and he's not doing anything. Like, we're not seeing the business end of it. Like, he's probably missing deadlines. He's not getting anything submitted.
Exactly. And the way the movie is formatted, like, we go from Halloween to Christmas in a scene.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm assuming we're a couple years through this movie.
You think so?
Yeah.
Damn, that's a timeline. I guess, yeah. I mean, like, you've got, like, your hypnosis visits and everything. Like, they keep going back to the cabin. Like, you're probably not doing, well, it seems like they're doing it throughout the year.
At least a full year.
Yeah.
And that's a long time to have very, very crazy spells and not do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Although she's all on board when he goes to the therapist that only positively affirms these events.
Yeah, and then also gets her to do hypnosis and realize that she had the same experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the weird bit of it. I mean, in real life, they're both very adamant that this happened.
Yeah, I love her in the first half. I love how much she butts up against him.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's the one that's defending the marriage and also defending her kid from this.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I thought those moments were so grounded that it makes all of the zany reactions feel more deliberate. Because at first I'm just like, oh, we're just shooting from the hip. Like, was there a script?
Did
we just tell
honestly,
Christopher Walken to go in there?
I don't think there might have been a script. The opening scene of the movie is Christopher Walken trying to figure out how to write. Like he's just making his way through his regular day as a writer. He's a little kooky. He's trying to also make dinner and prep for when their friends are coming. And then there's like, oh, there's a fire. Oh, our friends are here. Sorry, dinner's rude. There's a fire. And then the fire department walks in. It's bad improv. Like, how did the fire department get there? Like, oh, it's just dinner. Yeah, we got a 23 down here. It's not good. There are so many sequences of this movie that I don't think they had a script for. And I did read that Whitley Strieber did not like the movie. He did not think this was a good depiction of him and what he went through. It had additional...
Well, maybe it's because it depicted him almost murdering his wife.
There's that, possibly. he said that it talked about themes that he never brought up in the book, but also that they used a largely improvised style. So, I'm telling you, this movie, with the exception of any sequence where there's an alien in it, feels like improv.
The alien sequences feel like improv to me.
Yeah. some of the alien stuff feels very mapped out. The rest of it does kind of just feel like a weird...
Remember that moment? We haven't talked about this, but I feel like it's important to mention where he goes on for the final alien encounter of the film, and 5 minutes, they're just high-fiving and bowing at each other. They shake hands, they high-five, they bow, they curtsy. The alien takes his hat and his recorder and is like, no, you can't record this.
No, 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 no. Oh, man, it is a bonkers movie. And then at the end, it's just over. Like, it just ends.
Yeah, they're all on the roof and they're like, well, we're all changed forever.
Yeah, they go up to the roof, they see nothing, and they're like, yeah. That's right. There's nothing up there.
I know. And then he's could they not afford to render something up there?
And it takes the whole movie for him to be like, you know what? I'm not going to write this book that I'm writing that I don't like. I'm going to write this. In fact, I'm going to write it tonight. And then he sashays away to like his little office. And he starts writing the first chapters. And the rest is him just like staring at, I think, a drawing that he's made of the alien and the book. Like, what am I going to call it? Oh, I'll name it after you. I'll name it after this experience. And then credits. Like, it just ends. There's no finale, really.
Yeah, so it's a weird one.
Yeah. I mean, they intentionally they intentionally kept this an independent production because they didn't want major studios to make it like a special effects heavy. Like, they didn't want it to become Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
We want dancing puppets, and that is it.
Yeah. And I think this is the movie that the director was definitely trying to make. Like, the director gave Whitley Strieber no oversight in terms of writing the screenplay.
Because he knew he was going to overrule it.
Basically. And then also, Whitley was not allowed to step on the director's toes. Like, they both had sort of creative control in their own respects.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it is kind of weird to... I'm going to give you full creative control of the screenplay.
But we're also not
going to
use it.
Fully going to improvise the goddamn movie. Like, I tell you, there are whole... It's hard to explain on the podcast, but, like, there are whole sequences where Christopher Walken doesn't... Like, he's talking for, like, 45 seconds. He doesn't say anything. And then it's just scenes that don't really do anything or move the needle forward. It's just them hanging out. Also, anytime we see Christopher Walken in bed at night, he's like on top of his wife in a really uncomfortable way.
He sleeps on top of her.
Yeah.
He's like a bear.
Yeah. There's like, he's like draped over her. He's got his elbow in her face. There's another scene where he's using her butt as a pillow. It's hilarious. It's also on Tubi. Like, you should check out Communion,
so
guys.
So the only problem, and that's how we watched it on Tubi, was that there were no captions, and this movie desperately needed captions.
That's because everybody's mumbling.
I wanted to know every word that came out of Christopher Walken's mouth, and I got maybe 30% of them.
Yeah. I wish this was a hit. I wish this was a massive hit. Like, something like Fire in the
Sky.
It's a cult hit, but I want behind-the-scenes footage. You know? I want to see how this movie was made. I want all the conversations in the pre-production. Like, I guess I'm asking that this was a major movie, a major studio movie, so we'd have all that stuff. Because there's no way Christopher Walken wasn't just like, so he's a writer who writes weird stuff, so I'm just gonna be a weird guy. Like, and, like, he's off the wall. Every decision he makes is very strange and weird, because he's like, yeah, writers are weird. God damn. It's not a great movie. Like, as a movie, I think it's like a 1 out of 4. But, like, with all the kooky alien stuff and the Christopher Walken of it all, I think I'm going to give it a 2.5 out of 4.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you on 2.5 out of 4. What do you think the blue guys are?
I don't like the blue guys at all. I don't like to pretend they're there.
Are they a common occurrence? Because the support group talks about them like it's always reported that there's the typical big-eyed grays
and
there's
then, like,
also
troll
the blue trolls.
I don't know.
Or is he just trying to make fetch happen there?
God damn it, Willie. Stop trying to make fetch happen. I don't know. Like, that's not one that I hear about a whole lot. I'm sure there is. The problem now, too, is it's, you mention anything and people have had that experience the same way that you type in anything into the computer and you'll find a fetish for it. You can find anything.
Your own sub community.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it is a common occurrence and people do see it, like, it can't be any more uncommon than shadow people for
anybody. Well, that's
who
what
has
I was going to say
paralysis.
Too. Is also if it is something among the like sleep paralysis related condition, that is affected a lot by external things. So if you're reading, if you're inclined to believe in UFO experiences, and say you're reading about Whitley Strieber's invasion, and then you yourself experience those similar creatures, that's almost like a self-fulfilled prophecy because they're already existing somewhere in your brain.
Yeah.
And if you're afraid of them, like, this is why I don't look too much into sleep paralysis, because I haven't experienced it and I don't ever want to experience it. Mm. But the more you read into it and are afraid of it, the more likely it is to occur or recur. Like, if you are somebody who has sleep paralysis, the more you're afraid of it, it seems like you get in these bouts of it where it's happening every night for 3 months because you're so deep in it. So I just step away from it because I don't want to get into that pile of sleepy worms.
I remember reading about like lucid dreaming a lot as a teenager and wanting to and trying to get into that a little bit. But then like the more I read about it, the more I started seeing more and more people talking about sleep paralysis in relation to lucid
dreaming.
You're
like, oh!
And like it maybe I never would have gotten myself to lucid dream if I'm not already inclined for something like sleep paralysis. Like, I can't, what's the, it's like hypnophagia or something
like
that. Like,
it's
that's
a whole
phase.
Class of conditions within that realm. And a lot of them have, like different states of consciousness. And you see different fractal patterns and then some of narratives. And it's like, depending on how your consciousness is reacting and like your body releases a hormone that like basically like locks your muscles, and so you actually can't move.
I was always worried that if I got into lucid dreaming and that was a possibility, that I would start having sleep paralysis and seeing shadow people. So I was like, yeah, fuck it.
And I liked sleep too much to fuck that up for myself.
Honestly, if there is a way to tap into it, I don't think it's possible for me. Like, when I lay down, I'm out. Yeah. Like, immediately. There is no phase for me.
Yeah, John's got, like, soft narcolepsy.
Yeah, I fall asleep during movies all the time. As soon as the lights get a little dim, sometimes when I put on sunglasses, I'm like, this is sleepy in here. These have been fun episodes. And like, obviously, as much as we're coming into it being like, we want to believe, even though we're clearly not necessarily like alien believers, I'm always fascinated by these stories the way that I'm fascinated by ghost stories. I don't really flat out believe in either, but I do believe that people are having experiences. And I just think that we're
like,
not
I don't
approaching
believe
them the right
are
way.
People are lying.
Yeah.
Sure, you have some bad actors. You have bad actors in every community.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think a lot of people believe what they're saying. And I think there's some value in exploring those stories.
Yeah. And as much as it's a narrow-minded view to be like, oh, these things don't exist. So like taking like the Scully approach. Like, oh, this is not true whatsoever.
We're more of a scolder over here.
I guess, right? Like, you can't be hard-lined in any direction. Like, you have to allow a little bit of belief one way or the other.
And I think that's the whole point of the X-Files, is that they both center each other. They both bring each other closer to the middle of the line.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think sometimes when we investigate things like ghosts and UFOs, we're so hard-lined, or at least the people investigating them online and stuff, are so hard-lined into believing them as actual fact and reality that like we completely ignore any possibility that it's just psychological phenomena than it is like a physical phenomena. And people are saying the exact same thing about me, where I'm not believing it enough to actually allow for the possibility that these things are traveling light years away.
That's why everybody needs to buddy up with their Scully or
right?
partner with their Mulder.
If only one of us really dug it and really believed in it and the other one didn't, that would be us. But unfortunately...
Well, that's why we don't have a paranormal podcast. We have a movie podcast.
Exactly. And movies are all fake. Anyway, that's a 2.5 out of 4 from the both of us for Communion. Let us know what you thought of this kooky Christopher Walken movie.
And
also
your personal UFO and sleep paralysis experiences. Because I know quite a few of you guys have had sleep paralysis. These stories pop up every once in a while in our groups and stuff. And I love hearing them. I know if they're traumatic, like don't feel like
those
you need to talk about them.
And remember, like, we're not going to slap anything down and say like, oh, you're stupid, we don't believe in this. Like, I'm fascinated by it. I know that it happened to you. Who cares what it was? I want to hear about it.
Exactly.
We'll be back again next week with another episode of Nightmare on Film Street. You can share all of those stories and all of your opinions on these alien movies with us in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at nofspodcast.com/discord. And you can find hours of bonus content waiting for you in the Nightmare on Film Street Fiend Club at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
And if you'd rather, you can totally shoot us an email as well.
Yeah.
There's a contact page on our website at nofspodcast.com. That's it from us this week. Until next time, I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktail recipes. Created by us, your favorite podcasters and all-around weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, and Blackwell's. Or just head to nofspodcast.com/go for the links.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
Join us!
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Get ready to scream, shiver, and maybe even lose a little sleep. It's time for Nightmare on Film Street's 31-Day Horror Challenge. 31 horror movies, 31 days, 31 chances to win a spooktastic prize pack to help keep Halloween alive 365.
This year's prize pack includes goodies from Nightmare on Film Street's new upcoming book, Cocktails from the Crypt, 4K remastered copies of Demons and Demons 2, a Stephen King Blu-ray box set, Spirit Halloween lunch boxes, pumpkin carving kits, Halloween CD soundtracks, including the long out-of-print Monsters Speak, Nightmare on Film Street sticker packs, and more.
The rules are simple. Head over to nofspodcast.com/Halloween. Download the 31-Day Horror Challenge Movie Guide and post your Halloween watch list on social media using the hashtag 31-Day Horror Challenge to make this Halloween a night you'll never forget.
That's nofspodcast.com/Halloween and the hashtag 31-Day Horror Challenge.